Happy New Year, St. Luke's. Welcome to this second Sunday of Christmas and our first Sunday of the calendar year of 2025. Having just closed out this old calendar year and turning toward the new, transitioning now from Christmas to Epiphany in seasons, this is a particular time of transition that we encounter every year. And with the new year comes the kindling of dreams and plans and hopes and fears. Our uncertainty is heightened as we enter into a new year, certainly, as is the hope of possibility. We move into a new year with language that we claim about what's going to happen, right? And that language tends toward possibility, toward imagining what could be in this blank slate of 12 months to come. And that language causes us to commit ourselves to being attentive to what is real, what is true, what matters in our lives. It's the work of possibility. It's the work of hope. That work is attentiveness, it's imagination. And that work requires a particular kind of letting go, too. It requires a setting down of expectations and assumptions that we carry with us that cloud our ability to notice what is real and true. It's setting down those expectations that block our imagination for what is possible. For us now, our Christmas festivities have passed, right? However successfully we managed to celebrate, there's a certain relief in having pulled it off again. All of the decorations and the meals and the gatherings. And somewhere in the midst of all that, Jesus came into the world. That lowly infant in the manger. In the midst of all that, we marveled once more at the miracle of God with us. And that miracle fuels our hope for the new year. Even in a world as uncertain as the year 2025, Jesus has come. Jesus comes as an infant full of promise, promise that was announced by angels' visitations and promise that was affirmed by prophetic proclamation. Promise, though, is a complex thing. It's a mix of possibility and expectations, isn't it? God's promises are our source of hope, our hope for healing and wholeness, for peace, for flourishing. But words of promise are also where our expectations and assumptions find fertile soil and take root. It's where our ability to notice where God is at work in the world is narrowed in those expectations, because we're so busy looking for the outcomes that we envision should happen. But as usual through the gospel, today Jesus shows us how to lean into the possibility of promise and to let go of the expectations that we cling to. Because today we meet 12-year-old Jesus, no longer an infant cradled in wonder, but a boy on the cusp of manhood in his culture. He's no longer the passive object of angels' annunciations and prophetic proclamations. The Jesus we meet today is no longer simply the potential. He is assuming his own agency to fulfill promise. And it doesn't go as expected. Jesus doesn't fall in with the traveling caravan headed back to his hometown of Nazareth after the Passover festival. His parents, likely preoccupied with their own mix of post-holiday relief and letdown, were probably focused on the logistics of getting home and what catch-up work awaited them there. They go a full day before they realize that Jesus isn't with them. And after searching for him among the travelers, the panic sets in. That clutching fear, their frantic return to Jerusalem, that is slowed by the current of travelers who are leaving the city in the opposite direction, slowed by their need to stop and desperately ask each caravan, "Have you seen our boy?" I imagine for Mary, Simeon's words must have echoed in her heart, the words that he spoke to her when she brought Jesus to the temple when he was just an infant. Simeon said, "A sword will pierce your own soul too." Did she think, could this be the moment? Surely not, he's just a child. After 3 long days of searching, they find him, and he's not hurt, and he's not afraid. He's sitting confidently in the temple, engaged in deep conversation with the religious elders. He's listening and asking questions and answering them. He's amazing the elders with his intellect, his questions, his grasp of the divine mysteries. And with that amazement, does the expectations of the religious elders start to grow? Here was someone they were encountering that was full of potential. Surely he had the ability to advance not only God's glory, but perhaps their own agendas too. Did they immediately begin to ponder how he could fit into their plans for how the fulfillment of God's promises were going to go? And then there's the moment that his mother walks in. "Child, how could you have treated us like this?" she says, in a voice that I imagine is dripping with that motherly, dangerous fury and swelling relief. "How could you have treated us this way?" I wonder, was the question directed at her son or at God? How many of us have asked the same question of others, of God? "How could you have treated me like this?" Underneath the words of that question is a deeper cry. It's saying, "This is not how I expected things to go." And then Jesus speaks for the first time in Luke's gospel. And Jesus' words here, they don't ring to me as preteen sass or defiance. I hear in them genuine confusion and maybe even sadness. "Why were you searching for me? Didn't you know I am bound to be at my Father's? How could you not know me?" How many times have we asked that of the people that are closest to us, our parents, our friends? "How could you not know who I am and what I'm about?" Jesus' words challenge his parents, and they challenge us to set down our expectations and assumptions about who he is. They challenge us to see him as he is, not as how we imagine him to be. And Mary and Joseph don't understand when he replies, but they stop and they listen. They ponder his words. They step out of their expectations for him into that place of noticing and wonder, because that's where we can go when we set those expectations down. They step back into the heart of the mystery of incarnation. Now, when I was a child, younger than Jesus is today in today's gospel, this story was one of my favorites. I remember first hearing it in school chapel, and we would meet weekly and worship together in school, and we worshiped in this small chapel that I loved that was apart from the main church. It was small and it was intimate, and there was this small intimate gathering of peers and teachers, and there were no parents, and we got to ask questions, and we just got to be close to God. It was a place that I longed to linger in. And looking back, I realize it's where I began to sense my own call from God. I remember thinking it was thrilling for Jesus to stay behind, to listen, to learn, to ask questions, to just be there. I didn't think about the repercussions for his parents, maybe like he didn't. I could imagine the pull that Jesus felt to remain there, close to God. I was amazed that he was so attentive and so eager to step into his call by learning about who God was, who his people said God was, and what their relationship was. I admired his freedom for being so unconstrained by the expectations of teachers or parents. And I guess I didn't quite get the message that I'm hearing in this story today back then, because I spent decades trying to answer the call that I was sensing on my life in the way that I thought created the best outcomes, the outcomes that I envisioned. Now, reflecting on this passage in the memory of that place as a part of my own call, like Mary and Joseph, I didn't fully understand it. But as I pondered it over the years, as I gave up trying to answer the call in a way that checked certain boxes of security and certainty and expectations, as I began to look and listen for what God was calling me to, things began to come into my awareness. I became attentive to them and noticed that my call was unfurling in new ways. So as we settle into both the hopes and the daily routines of this new year, I wonder how we together will do the work of possibility and hope. How will we be attentive to what is real and true, and to imagine together what could be, unconstrained by what we think should be? How will we listen with hope to the realities around us, rather than seeking comfort in our own biases? How will we seek and serve Christ in the people who show up as their authentic selves, even when it disrupts our expectations? Reflecting on this passage, I think about a particular authentic self who showed up in the world and disrupted expectations put on him, a soul that we lost this week, President Carter. Carter's faith guided him through his decades of service, service that often defied the expectations that were placed on him. He left the presidency, what many would see as the pinnacle of achievement, and he spent his post-presidential years working to advance human dignity, building homes for those who are unhoused, eradicating life-limiting diseases, and advocating for peace and human rights. Carter once said, "You only have to have two loves in your life, for God and for the person in front of you at any particular time." President Carter's life exemplified the good news of what it means to be attentive to what is real and what is true, to meet others where they are, seeking and serving Christ in every person. So as we move forward into this year with all of its possibilities and uncertainties, the gospel gives us reason to root ourselves in the work of hope. It asks us to confront the realities of what may happen. And it does this by revealing the mystery of God with us and unlocking our capacity to imagine together what could be. Amen.